Hi, this is Andrew Conry Murray, new products editor at Network Computing. Today I'm speaking with Scott Weiss. He's the CEO of Ironport Systems, which makes messaging security appliances. Scott, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here.
So you started off your career as an early employee at Hotmail before it got acquired by Microsoft, and then went on to found Ironport Systems, which makes anti-spam appliances. So you've been deeply involved in the email space. I'm wondering, over the years, if you've seen any significant changes and if anything has really stayed the same?
Well, obviously, there's been tons of changes. And, you know, you're right, the time at Hotmail was very instructive as to kind of where internet email was going and really formed the basis for Ironport. I'd point to three things that that you know really kind of we could see with certainty back at Hotmail and really you know kind of came to fruition over the years. The first one was just the amount of data going over the SMTP protocol. You know, it exploded. And it was you know average message size certainly played a role. You know I think one of the innovations that we forget about at Hotmail was HTML mail. That was the original the name for Hotmail actually came from the word HTML. But that is an immediate 10x multiplier on the size of the email message. And you can imagine marketing mail also took off, which also spawned spam and the spam issue. It really wasn't a major issue until kind of around 2000. I'd also say that the amount of processing on that mail has increased exponentially since the Hotmail days. The processing that we did on mail was actually very little prior to 2000. We just processed the mail for mail routing. It came in, you just had to figure out where it was going, and you sent it there. Now we, process, the first process that we put on was for antivirus, and then anti-spam came in, and now we do all kinds of processing for policy enforcement, looking for intellectual property leaving the building. This is all very new, and I'd even say encryption, which widely was pushed out in the HTTP protocol, really hasn't come to fruition in SMTP yet, which is another process of wrapping and unwrapping the message. And I think the third thing, which is obvious to everybody, is mission criticality. The email is now a utility, much like electricity or telephone, that just businesses cannot run without. And back in the Hotmail days, it was Hotmail would go down for an entire day, and people would give us the benefit of the doubt. We were keeping the thing going with chewing gum and dental floss, and it's not that they weren't bothered by it, but it wasn't as much of a utility as it is today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if BlackBerry goes out for an hour, people are screaming.
Oh, it's like the national news. BlackBerry went out for an hour. It really has made it since we are part of the plumbing in the email infrastructure. Obviously, the meteoric rise of Ironport has been built on those. What we could see with pretty good clarity back at Hotmail.
So getting to the future, Cisco announced this January it was acquiring your company. How does Ironport fit into Cisco's overall strategy?
Well, I think if you think about it, Cisco has been making a lot of headway in the security business, and security is a great business. I mean, I think that, any time you security problems arise by, number of connections to that particular device, right? As the more connected we are, the more security, network and application security issues we're going to have. And if you're not connected to anything, there's no security issues, right? When I was playing my Nintendo box with my TV, there was no, I was never worried about getting a virus on it. Now that I, connect over my Xbox over the internet, I now have to worry about somebody tunneling in and, sorting it out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's security issues come up from number of connections and number of applications that that we want to put on these devices, and so Cisco sees this as a big business. I mean, it's a It's growing, you know, over 20% a year, just about every aspect of security. And I think that they looked at what we do as particularly filling a hole in their business. I mean, if you think about the firewall business, you know, the firewall essentially goes in and locks all of the doors, except for two doors, which are kind of left wide open, port 80 and port 25. Mm-hmm. And when I say wide open, they're communication portals. It's where most of your web traffic goes and most of your email traffic goes. And you have to leave those communication doors open because that's, you know, that's how your users are using the internet. And Ironport doesn't really plug the doors, but we kind of set up a you know, like an airport security screening at those doors. So we watch everything that comes in and watch everything that leaves, and it's a logical adjunct to the firewall. So we physically sit in the network in the same place in the DMZ. You know, it's very funny as I went out with investors. You know, I'd put up kind of the evolution of the network infrastructure, and I'd have the router, the cache, the firewall, the load balancer, and you know, all these devices started off as general purpose boxes running some sort of freeware like Squid with the cache, or you know, various Route D with the router, and then a company came in and commercialized the technology. And ours was SendMail running on Sunboxes, but every time I put that slide up, everybody would look at me and say, "Gosh, isn't Cisco going to get into this market?" You know, I look at that's somebody's product line, that Cisco load balancer, firewall, cache, so ultimately they figured it out too.
And what's your role going to be in Cisco?
My role is going to continue to stay what it is today. You might have noticed in the announcement, we're keeping Ironport as a separate business unit within Cisco, and a variety of reasons for that. One, you know, I think security as a business is one where the customers expect a level of understanding and a level of connection that's different from other businesses. I mean, when you have a security issue, you know, and you call in about it, you don't want somebody at the end of the line saying, "Hey, what product are you using?" You want somebody at the end of the line saying, "Hey, I know what version you're on." Right? Mm-hmm. It's a little bit of a different mindset, and I think the ecosystem that we've created around customer responsiveness and our responsiveness to security threats is something that Cisco wants to preserve. So I'll be running the Ironport division here at Cisco, and you know, they've done I think it's almost 130 acquisitions, and only three have been kind of cast as separate businesses: Linksys, Scientific Atlanta, and Ironport. So I'll be doing what I'm doing, and we're keeping the whole band together, and we're going to continue to we'll see a lot of synergies with the sales organization. There's some synergies on the technology side, but essentially my job is going to be the same. Just won't be doing an IPO.
Okay, must be refreshing.
Yeah, it's great to be able to just focus on the business and customers. Fundraising and all that entails is a distraction from that core task, which is serving the customer.
And so you're saying with this relationship with Cisco that you're kind of avoiding, you know, the inevitable layer of bureaucracy that gets added on when a larger company buys a smaller company?
You know, I hope so. I think that Cisco has had a great track record with doing acquisitions, and I think that they, you know, if I were to look, Cisco as a company is kind of a halfway house for entrepreneurs, right? I mean that in a positive way. You know, they're a unique company in that they've been primarily built through acquisitions. So there's a lot of entrepreneurial talent that's resident within Cisco. They know that they need to have a light touch in order to retain the talent. They do a great job of retaining the talent, and it's because they've got this entrepreneurial ecosystem that allows everybody to share the resources, you know, kind of the mothership, whether it be space or even the channel relationships and the sales relationships Cisco has with the customers, and just focus on building the best products and bringing them to market. And so I certainly hope that the marriage hasn't consummated yet, but so far everything looks, all the representations that have been made prior to the marriage look like they're going to be, looks like we'll be happily ever after.
Around 90% of all the email that network computing gets in its domain is spam, and I expect it's similar for other organizations. What's going on out there?
There's a lot of things going on out there. There's a lot of innovation happening on the spam side. Image spam is a new threat that made it by a lot of the legacy filters. It's really hard to detect. I mean, they kind of randomize a pixel within an image, and unless you block all images, which I don't think people want to do, it becomes very difficult to detect that that was a piece of spam. The rise of the botnets has also been very difficult. Before it was, you could isolate these spammers as coming from, illegitimate sources in, Brazil or, the Ukraine, and just block that source. But now most of the spam is coming from Comcast or people that have PCs that have been infected and are hanging off a cable modem somewhere in the U.S., and you can't block Comcast, right? You can't block, a major ISP. And so the spammers are getting better, and they're also, delivering at much higher volumes. And network world is not alone. In the U.S. in particular, about 80 to 90% of all incoming mail is now spam. And it's because it's so easy to send out, it's so cheap to send out, it's like carpet bombing. You hope that, of all the bombs you drop, one hits the target because it's all you need. And the cost to send out that nth spam message, especially when you're just using somebody else's cable modem and somebody else's PC to send it out, is practically zero. I don't see an end in sight, unfortunately. This is somebody asked me a while ago, Scott, what are the top exploits that we're going to see, the top vulnerabilities that we're going to see this year in 2007? And, my answer was, we have no idea. Nobody has any idea. It's, it's just like airport security. We didn't have people taking their shoes off until somebody tried to blow up their shoe on a plane, right?
Right.
We were carrying our water on board until somebody realized we're going to mix these two liquids together to create a bomb. So, as people keep trying to get around security, the security that we have to try to anticipate what new methods might be implored. But I think it has a lot to do with reaction time, and it has a lot to do with the amount of data that you see. And so I think the anti-spam market will continue to consolidate. There's not that many people that can keep up with the advanced techniques that these spammers are employing in there. They have a profit motive, so they can afford to bankroll hackers to put together new and innovative things that we have to combat. I always say it's kind of like a team-on-team sport, and we just have to continue to field the best team against their teams that are spread all over the world.
Mm-hmm. It certainly makes for a good business model.
Security in general is a great business just because of what I described before, is that consumers and business users want two things. They want more connectivity. They want their applications to talk to other applications, and they want new applications. I mean, just look at the cell phone. We never used to worry about viruses infecting the cell phone, but now we want more applications on the cell phone. We want it to surf the web. We want it to do instant messaging. We want it to take pictures. Every new application and every new connection involves a potential security issue. And so, I think that the the demand for connectivity, the demand for new cool applications is exponential, and as such, the you know that leaves the vulnerability as a problem that everybody needs to address.
So you sort of anticipated my next question. You know, if 2007 was the year of image-based spam, what's 2008 going to bring? But maybe you just don't know.
Yeah, and that's you know, unfortunately, that's the fact. I could you know. Anything that I would tip my hand to, let's say we think it's this, you know, there's going to be spammers out there listening to the podcast, right? They're always trying to understand what new countermeasures we're using in order to, you know, find a way around them. It's, you know, I always say that it's like the, you know, it's like the a dog trying to find its way out of a fence. You know, they just keep digging holes and finding a way, and they all of a sudden, you know, no matter what you do, your dog's missing again, right? It's persistence, it's trial and error. You know, these guys, they have test accounts at every major ISP, and they just keep, you know, fiddling with their logic and until stuff starts getting through. And then once they figure out a way around the defenses, they then put that out to all of their bots, and they send a blast. I mean, to just give you some ideas about it. Like they figured out that a number of anti-spam companies are reliant on people to write rules. You get too reliant on people to write rules. Well, you know, people have to sleep, and people don't generally like to work on Sundays. So the spammers, send blasts, you know, in the middle of the night on Sundays when people can't write rules or they're not around to write rules. So you have to, you know, now we have people, you know, in different geos that are up and awake and alert and watching and writing rules in the middle of the night, you know, or machine learning that can, you know, kind of spot new things that are happening and write rules, you know, while people are sleeping. So there's a great quote that I got from a security guy, and it was, if you think your system is foolproof, you have greatly underestimated the ingenuity of fools. And that is exactly what's happening.
This, again, is anticipating another one of my questions. You're very good at this.
Go right ahead.
So our report
claims at least you have the answers, right? It's all
that's
here.
True.
Go ahead.
So Ironport says its reputation filtering capability can stop 80% of spam without the need for scanning. I was curious if you've seen evidence that spammers are learning to thwart reputation filtering.
One of the ways to thwart reputation filtering is through the bots, right?
Yeah.
What I have seen, and this is an outcrop of reputation filtering, is that people need to police their own networks. Comcast and I would say even corporations. You know, many corporations, we actually turn on spam scanning outbound, and they're shocked that they're sending spam out of their, you know, a Fortune 500 company is a spammer, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's because they've got some, you know, one of the issues is the end users want more mobility. So most people now are not on desktops, they're on laptops. And they take those laptops home, they take them to Starbucks, they get infected with spyware, and the next thing they know, they've got a spam-sending zombie coming out of their network. Well, there are ways to stop that from emanating from your network, and corporations need to take responsibility for doing that, corporations and ISPs. And so I've seen a real movement towards people policing their own networks because of not just reputation filtering, but there are still, you know, blacklists, no matter how primitive they still are still widely used. Mm-hmm. And when you're emanating spam, it's many of the blacklists are just, you know, shoot first, ask questions later, and you know, you find that very legitimate companies are ending up on blacklists because of their, you know, they just don't do a great job of policing their own network. Now, we obviously offer tools and applications to help you with that, and I see that as a boon to reputation filtering. If you care about your reputation, you will take steps to ensure it. And so there's a, you know, in as much as the spammers are finding a way around reputation, the companies want to take greater steps to protect their reputation. And so I think that there's a movement afoot that's going to make reputation filtering more powerful once people are really taking their reputation seriously.
So in the fourth quarter of 2006, Ironport acquired Postex, an email encryption company, and also announced a partnership with Vontu, which is a data leak prevention company. I'm curious how significant the compliance and information leak prevention markets are for driving new business for you guys.
Not very significant for driving new business. I look at both of these applications as how should I say? Just, you know, they're new applications that logically reside at the mail gateway, right? I mean, if you're, you know, you're primarily worried about things leaving the building, they sure, some people will take a disk and a key fob or, but the primary way that something's going to leave the building is they attach it to an email or they upload it to a Hotmail account. And that logically is a place where Ironport, and also when you do encryption, it if you trust your network and I trust my network, the best type of encryption is typically, you know, gateway to client or gateway to gateway encryption, and that naturally lives on an Ironport appliance. And so, I think that that you'll continue to see consolidation in these markets around the gateway, because it's just like the same way anti-spam and antivirus consolidated on the gateway. It's just a logical place for it. You know, you want to catch the spam and the viruses before you have to store it on your Exchange server. So you never really know what the next issue is going to be. I think that I'm bullish on both data leakage and encryption. In fact, one of the things I just got back from a trip to India, and many of the large Indian outsourcing companies are very concerned about intellectual property protection, because you think about it. I'm Oracle or Cisco, for that matter, and I'm shipping my code off to India to get work done. I want to make sure it's not leaving the building over there too, right? So I see it as important, but that does not typically drive sales. You know, that's more of a hygiene feature, something that I want to have as part of my gateway purchase. I think the main driver of sales for us is still world class anti spam and antivirus efficacy. And there's still many companies that don't know any better. You know, they have a solution where they are, you know, just living with spam on a daily basis. Or they have an opposite problem, is they just have a bad spam filter, so they use a quarantine as a crutch. You know, it used to be that, you know, I had my old problem was I got too much spam in my inbox. My new problem is I have to go find a needle in the haystack. I'm missing mail, right? I've got a bad spam filter, and I have to go, you know, look around, hunt around in a quarantine on a daily or weekly basis. You know, most of our customers unplug the quarantine. You know, they've come to trust that we do a great job of both capturing the spam and not having false positives to deal with. So that still is a huge driver of our business.
So do you have an ILP strategy that you can talk about, you know, generally going forward?
I'm sorry.
Information leak prevention.
So I always say data DLP, ILP. Yeah. So we've. I think we'll continue to partner with folks like Vontu for people that want to get the, you know, Vontu's a very, you know, large enterprise application that handles much more than just the gateway security. These are people, you know, that have, you know, whether it be an insurance company or a financial services company that has a need for just really locking down every piece of data through every, you know, orifice of the company. I mean, they go down to the PC and, you know, they can tell where key fobs and other things are coming out of the data coming out of anywhere. I think that we'll continue to partner there. We'll also have, you know, we also on the Ironport have our own data leakage for stuff that's just typically leaving via email and web, which is more, you know, kind of an 80-20 rule around, you know, where most of the data is leaking is just from employees that that either go, you know, like I said, upload it through email and web, and that we'll continue to take care of largely by ourselves.
You've also now got access to Cisco resources for acquisitions. Is there anything you can talk about there?
You know, I think we'll continue you know, security is a business that you just can't do it all yourself. I mean, there's so many teams out there, and, you know, like spyware. What the heck was that? Where'd that come from, right? And then all of a sudden, you know, there's a whole business like Webroot that's just a spyware business, right? I think that intrusion prevention was another one of those that just kind of, you know, came up and you know, everybody had to acquire one of those companies. If you look at the dearth of security IPOs, it's because in order to be a top-notch security company, you have to continually layer on acquisitions of folks that have, you know, teams that have attacked a certain segment of the infrastructure or adjacent areas that are plug a hole in your similar to how I was talking about the firewall and the two ports.
Mm-hmm.
There's none imminent, and obviously now that we're part of Cisco, you know, my latitude around discussing any types of acquisitions has been constricted. The answer is yes. We'll continue to buy as part of the Cisco security team, and we'll continue to buy as part of Ironport. You know, we had a long roadmap that we planned on filling once we were a public company, and you know, our intentions are to continue on with that once the deal is consummated here, hopefully in the end of May, early June, and so the answer is yes, but I just can't be specific.
So you were with Hotmail, got acquired by Microsoft. You left Microsoft to found Ironport. Now that Ironport has been acquired, do you have your eye on a new venture?
I don't. You know, I think the differences between Microsoft and Cisco are, you know, Microsoft, the center of gravity is up in Redmond, and I am a Bay Area guy. I'll always be a Bay Area guy, and Cisco, center of gravity is obviously here in the Bay Area. Secondly, and when I say center of gravity, there really wasn't an opportunity for me to. I think it's difficult for Microsoft to have executive positions outside of Redmond. I mean, it just they are very centered there. And I think to a certain extent, if you're not on the sales side, if you really want to be in, you know, part of the operations, it's hard for any company to be that far afield and have meaningful executive tracks. So Cisco being a Bay Area company and having a track record of success, I think that you know, for the foreseeable future, I'll be running Ironport here, and my sense is that there's going to be some great opportunities for me outside of just running Ironport, you know, within the broader Cisco moniker. I think that they do a great job, similar to Microsoft and GE and other large companies, of rotating executives into new roles, promoting from within, and you'll see a lot of movement around, you know, like all of a sudden, the guy that was working on Office will move over to MSN, and you know, somebody that's working on GE Plastics moves over to GE Aircraft Engines. You know, large companies have figured out the way to retain executives is to continue to give them more and different responsibility. And you know, I certainly don't rule out going and getting back into the smaller company thing, but you know, so far from what I've seen, I'm running a very significant and strategic business for Cisco. I'm going to stay put for the foreseeable future.
Okay. So I have to say, it sounds like you started Ironport in part so that you could move back to the Bay Area.
So I never moved up to Redmond.
Okay.
that was the issue about me staying at Microsoft. I was always in the Bay Area.
Uh-huh.
Hotmail was a Bay Area company that Microsoft bought, and I spent a lot of time commuting up to Redmond, and they wanted me to move up to Redmond, but it just wasn't in the cards for me and the family. I got three young kids in school here, and you know, you tend to grow roots, so to speak.
Absolutely. Okay, well, those are my questions, and I appreciate your time.
Thanks.